G'day team, welcome to another installment of the U Project. I hope you're just bloody terrific. You know why? Because I'm like that. Hi, Tiffany Ann Cook over there at TYP Central.
Hey, Anthony, how are you?
Ah, I'm bloody terrific. Do you know one of the reasons I'm good?
Tell me.
No, Harps. Why?
Tell me. Elaborate.
Well, we've got the TYP beanies in. We've got the U Project beanies in.
Well, we must have those letterbox thieves because mine's been empty. Mine's been empty in the last couple of days.
Well, and you just keep a lookout. Yours is on the. I'll send the U Project carrier pigeon Brian over with yours in his beak. It'll be there very soon.
He better be here within 7 days because I'll be moving out.
Did you? Oh, that's correct. You're moving. Did you see the picture of Melissa, your counterpart, with a beanie on?
And what a stunning lass she is in that beanie. That will sell like hotcakes, won't it?
I was going to say, did you see how happy she wasn't?
Yeah.
She, when I said to her, because obviously we're in lockdown, so normally I put shit on and I'll wear it, right? Which nobody needs to see me, but whatever. Because she, I mean, a lot of people don't like having their photo taken. I get it. She takes it to 15 levels beyond that. When I said to her, because she took a photo of it sitting on her kitchen bench, I'm like, that looks like dog shit. We actually need it on someone's head. And I reckon it took her 2 days to take it.
And I want to know how many photos are on her phone.
15,000. 15,000. Oh, well, here we go. Now, I'm always interested in our guests because we have good guests, but we've never had a spiritual teacher. We've never had a psychic reader. We've never had somebody who's down the bloody spiritual rabbit hole like Sheila V. Hi, Sheila.
Hi, Craig. How are you?
I'm just really good. Thank you for coming on the U Project.
It's awesome to be here.
Yeah, you look so happy. You have good energy. What's going on there?
I do. I found a way to be at peace with life as I sit here in Sydney lockdown, you know, bunkering away, you know, like it's the war zone. I'm like, you know, I'm wearing a smile because I do. It's a spiritual practice just to find some sort of joy every day.
Well, if you want any lockdown tips, talk to Tiff and I because we are the bloody lockdown king and queen because we have spent so much time, well, not just us, but all Victorians, we're pretty good at it. How's the vibe in Sydney? Are people melting down? Are they coping? Is it a mixed kind of response?
You know, I think it's a mixed kind of response. I think I've got a lot of Melbournean clients and I find you guys so resilient. So I think we can probably take a leaf out of the resilience book. You know, I'm still getting to the beach. I'm an amateur surfer. I'm on a blue foamy every second day in the surf. So that's my way of, you know, dealing with my mental health. I think Sydney siders, we're collaborating, we're helping each other. I'm noticing a lot more smiles when I go for my walks where, you know, I think it's, you know, I always try and find the silver lining. I think we're connecting, quite frankly, and I think it's nice too.
Like a huge part of this is the conversation is how do I manage me? Because I can't manage COVID and I can't manage the government and neither do I want to, and I can't manage the weather and, you know, most of the external things in my world, I have little or no control of, but I have control of me. And so in the middle of that, it's kind of a self-management challenge, really, isn't it? Managing my mind, managing my emotions, my body, my choices, my soul.
I love how you just described that, Craig. That's perfect. COVID is the great spiritual awakening. We were distracted by gadgets. We were sitting in peak hour traffic for hours. We were disconnected from our partners and from our children for years. And we were hanging on to every overseas trip as a way to self-medicate. And then COVID happened, okay? And it's a spiritual awakening that we'll look back in decades to come as a profound time. And you know, it's a time of absolute introspection. It's a very uncomfortable time because we can't reach for things that can distract us from our pain. You know, we've got to sit in our relationships and have a look at our own behaviors. Why am I being triggered by my partner, by my parents, by my children? You know, I have friends that have had a new look at their kids in the schooling and going, wow, this is where they're at, and different kind of conversations, you know, a different way of engaging. It's a powerful time. You're right. Introspection is what it's called for now.
Now, Some of my listeners, Sheila, right now are going, stick your spiritual awakening up your bum, because my life is shit. There's no fucking enlightenment going on. I've got bills and my kids are giving me the shits. It's all right for you, single spiritual lady in Sydney, your fucking caftans and your dream catchers, right? It's all good for you, but you're not me, living in fucking Reservoir in Melbourne with four screaming kids. What do you say to those people?
I'm glad I'm not living with you. truthfully, the saddest reality, and I have this conversation with all my clients, and I've written about this in my book. After you have your spiritual awakening, what happens? Life. My life isn't any easier. It's how I make it easier. And, you know, you're probably aware of this, Craig, the duality of life. In every moment, there's an equal and opposite force happening. There's joy and sadness at the exact same time. Mm. And it's how you want to be with it. You know, you're right. I don't have four screaming kids. Correct, yeah. Craig. But wow, isn't there a profound silence and loneliness if you live alone in an apartment? Okay. You might have a lot of money and be living a great amount of comfort, but there might be a difficulty in your marriage. The truth is everyone is suffering. Right? Everyone has their flavor of suffering, and it's just how you manage your flavor.
You know, that's true. And also when you think about it, like if we, you know, life has peaks and troughs, and if we call the peaks happiness and joy and fun and pleasure, right? And the troughs kind of pain and sadness. And I know there's a lot of different emotions and feelings and states on the scale, but you know, if we only had happiness, we wouldn't have any context, and we probably wouldn't end up with happiness because we don't know pain, because we don't know sadness. And we need the contrast. Like we need both. Like we need sadness and pain to appreciate the joy and the happiness and the great days when they come, you know?
Absolutely. More than we need it, it just exists. It's like a universal law. It always just exists. So, you know, you have these screaming kids and a challenging partner at home that doesn't listen to you, but wow, you know, the kids do bring you joy at times.
Yes.
You can sit around and watch a movie and laugh and have connection. It just depends on how in those moments you see it. So you've had Dee Martini on as a guest, and he's a great speaker about this, and I teach this a lot too. It's the practice of gratitude. The practice of gratitude will get you out of the depths of despair and present to what is the reality in your life. It will get you very quickly out of victimhood. So everyone has something to be grateful for. And this isn't a woo-hoo practice. It actually works. It rewires your neural pathways. And gratitude brings you into breath and into the moment. It's the practice of it. So finding a mentor or a coach that actually will hold you accountable to that practice is quite important.
Yeah. We live in a very... and I'm generalizing, but in Australia, let's just go in Australia. We live in and we have listeners all around the world, but we live in a very physical, three-dimensional, commercial world, obviously, because we've got to pay bills. We've got to run the car. We've got to feed the kids. We've got to put kids through school. We've got to buy a house or rent or whatever it is. And so there's all that external physical distraction and necessity of a practical existence in a practical commercial world, right? And so we're kind of taught and trained and told and taught and trained and programmed in a way that success is about all things external, Sheila. So what you have and what you own and what you drive and where you live and what you look like and what people think of you and your brand and your income and your academic credibility and all of these things, which is part of the process and not good or bad, just is what it is. But sometimes we tick all of those boxes, but in the middle of that are miserable or disconnected or lonely or sad. Tell us about the external world and the internal and how we might, I don't know, create some synergy or some balance.
There's two ways we create balance. It's a really great insight, Craig. The universe will create it for you if you don't listen to your intuition. And the universe will create a balance by creating a crisis in your life that will take away all of your external attachments. And it's called like A Dark Night of the Soul. And in my book, Brave, Courageously Live Your Truth, I write, there's a chapter called The Dark Night of Courage. So if you have an imbalance in your life where I had a sparkly title, I was a finance director, I was so important, earning great money. I owned a Mercedes-Benz. I still own it. and I was attached to saying who I was in the world deep in my heart. I had another calling, and that was to become a, dare I say, a psychic medium. I had a calling to write a book. I had a calling to help people. But gosh, I wasn't giving up my my flashy car and my salary for that. Mm. So I manifested this change. And we manifest changes by our internal thoughts. So every day my internal mantra was, I hate this job. I wish I didn't have it. I hate this job. I wish I didn't have it. So the universe was listening. And then one day I was marched into the CEO's office and I was fired. And I could feel the blood just draining from, you know, my head all the way down. And then the shamanic thumping of my heart, right? Like an ayahuasca ceremony, which I've done in Peru. So the shamanic drumming of my heart as I walked to my desk and I picked up my crystals and I walked out of the office. And I knew in that moment I was being saved from my small life. So to answer your question, the universe will conspire to free you from the things that you're not meant to attach from. Okay. It's called a midlife crisis, a dark night. Some people might be experiencing it during COVID. The alternative is a more gentler approach where you have a knowing that there's something bigger for you and you start working with someone like you, Craig, you're in this space, someone like me, a mentor, a teacher, a coach going, hey, there's a greater meaning. I can't seem to access it. And then there's a process you go through where you meditate, you use your intuition. You go, I've always dreamed of, I've always wanted to, I wonder if I could do this and that. And then people guide you to show you how to live your life and make some adjustments. Slow, you become more in alignment. There's two ways. One's a little easier than the other.
I'm really fascinated with your mindset and your philosophy because we're quite different, not better or worse, just different. And I'm really intrigued. Like my philosophy, again, not better or worse, just different. If I was hating my job, I'd just fucking leave. I wouldn't go into work every day going, I hate my job and wait for the universe. Like my thinking is, well, make a decision, be brave and take action. What about that as an option?
That's an amazing option. And my book's called Brave. Because we think of bravery, and you're clearly a brave man, Craig. You know, your life path demonstrates constant transitions and changes and stepping into empowerment. And we think of brave in terms of the large acts, saving someone from a fire, saving someone from a physical disaster. True bravery is honoring your soul. And quite often we get caked on so many limiting beliefs and so many constructs about how to live life that aren't our own. And it's a real unraveling. You know, I'm was raised in a conservative Sri Lankan culture. You don't freeze your eggs. You curry them loyally for your husband. You don't quit your, you know, I did an MBA. You don't quit your big corporate job to do this crazy thing on the side. And so I had to shed a lot of what will people think? How do I tell my parents? I've spent 20 years doing this thing. How do I quit it and justify that? Mm. And there's a lot of limiting beliefs. We don't even know we hold limiting beliefs. You know, they're there in the unconscious.
I'm so interested. Now, I want you to impersonate your parents for me when you told them what they, you went, you know, my great job, my car, the big income, the MBA. Yep, I'm becoming a psychic medium. How did that go down?
Oh, look, it didn't go down well, you know, and my dad was, I was trying to explain to him that I wasn't happy at work, and bless my dad, he's a phenomenal doctor, he's now retired, highly intelligent, and my mum's actually medium. They had an arranged marriage. That's why I'm half brains and half intuition, right? My dad kind of said, you know, you can't be happy all the time, and I really respect my dad. I'm very like him, okay, and that's where it got confusing because I'm also sought his approval for most of my life. So when we're very attached to our parents and we have an attachment style that's still probably I hadn't stepped truly into my power as an adult, I was still looking for approval. Mm. And that's when I went in asking permission versus going, you know, this is who I am. And I talk about this in my book. You know, when you step up to your parents or those around you in an empowered way, they step forward powerfully with you. And so my parents have come on the journey with me as I've grown up.
Wow. Good for them. Good for them. That's awesome. God bless their little bloody socks, mum and dad. Good on you.
And you know something? I look back at my dad. They're migrants to this country. They migrated in 1975. They've demonstrated great courage. And so my flavour of courage is just a bit different to theirs. And so I stopped making them kind of the wrong people for having conservative views. I've just thought, well, they've been courageous. What's my flavour of courage? And it might look different, and that's okay. Half the battle is giving ourselves permission.
Mm. And also I think sometimes us kids, and I know I'm a lot older than you, but I'm still a kid because I've still got parents. Like we kind of expect stupidly our parents to be more like we think they should be,
or
more like us. But your parents didn't grow up in the environment or the situation that you grew up. You know,
no, absolutely.
And they didn't have the opportunity or the resources you did. Same with me. I mean, my dad grew up, and both of my parents grew up in really crap situations. And then when I was younger, sometimes I would think, I wish my dad was a bit more this or a bit less that. And I used to be a little critical. But when I got to know my dad's, his genesis story, like his childhood, his teen years, his environment, his, I'm like, fuck, my dad is father of the fucking century, considering where he came from. Like my childhood was like a Disney movie compared to my dad's.
Yeah, wow.
You know, so you just go, oh yeah, well, pull your head in, Craig, because if you went through what he went through, you probably wouldn't be as evolved or as kind and loving as he actually is, albeit in his somewhat weird way at times. Tell me about, okay, so you've made a decision or you've been given your marching orders at work. You picked up your crystal. Of course you did. I would have picked up my dumbbells, but whatever. You picked up your crystal.
They're pretty heavy. They were kind of like dumbbells. My black obsidian was pretty heavy.
You walked out the door and the universe twisted your arm up your back and went, all right, fucking here you go. Tell us. So what happened next?
Okay, so we'll backtrack 2 months just to give some flavour to the story. I just come back from the Arthur Findlay College. The Arthur Findlay College is this magical place in England, like Hogwarts.
I was going to say, is it like Hogwarts?
It is exactly like Hogwarts. There's even sorting hats and things like that. And there's all magical mysterical potions that you take over there. I'm just kidding. I went over to the Arthur Findlay College and for a whole week I studied the art of mediumship. It's a castle. It sleeps about 80 of us. And you for breakfast, you have breakfast, lunch and dinner there. And all day long, you channel dead people. And there's teachers there that teach you the art and craft of how you do this. And before I went to the Arthur Findlay College, I had this feeling, am I a psychic? Am I a medium? Can I really do this? And I teach this now in my courses because half of it is limiting beliefs. So I did this amazing course. And at the end of the week, I was like, wow, I have these abilities and I'm really in my power and clear about how to use them. So that's why when I got back to this job, I knew I didn't want to do the job anymore. I wanted to work.
Right.
So yeah, I started my business. I started working and with great momentum, right? So in business and in life, when you got momentum, it's fantastic. My first mentor was on psychic television, which is a show on, it's Channel 74. It was not Channel 7, it was one of the other stations, but it was live readings on air. And after 6 months, she said to me, you're ready to go on psychic television. So I had this unusual moment, Craig, where I was offered a finance director role in a major publishing house and the opportunity to appear on psychic television in the same week. Mm. And this is really important because we think in life we've got to choose one or the other. I had this moment where I thought, I wonder if I can do both.
Mm. Of course you did.
So I was a finance director by day and on psychic TV by night. And I got to blend my spiritual and corporate life. And I thought, why do I have to choose?
Now, okay. So full disclosure. So I grew up in a really religious paradigm, right? Now, people like you, you're the enemy. You know that, right? You know, you're the enemy.
You're not my enemy, but I might be yours.
I'm only kidding.
I know.
But when you grow up in I'm being silly, everyone. When you grow up in a really religious, like some religions, they're very anti, you know, psychic this and occulty that and witchy this. And do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
Right? But how do you explain what you do to people who like, it's like, if for people who grow up in religion, it all kind of makes sense because you just grew up in it. But if you'd never heard of religion and then you got taught about some of the whatever, some of the beliefs or whatever, some of the theology in certain religions, you'd think it was just fucking ridiculous, right? Mm-hmm. But because we grew up in it, we're like, oh no, of course, that's okay and that's normal. But for you who grew up with a mum who's a medium, and you talk about talking to the dead and you talk about tapping into whatever it is that you tap into, how do you explain that to people in a way that doesn't, I don't know, freak them out or confuse them? Or because it can be a bit, confronting for people.
Yeah, you know, and that's common, but I'll share with you this. It's more common than people believe.
Right.
So you've hit on it a few ways. We were taught, you taught religion. I went to a Methodist school and I was raised in a Hindu family and I've studied other religions since then, Buddhism, the Krishnas. I've been fascinated by religion, right? So it's just a personal thing I've done. And you're taught it, it becomes a construct and a belief set and then a part of your value system that's handed to you, right? The thing I find with intuition, and let's use the word intuition because I think everyone can relate to gut feeling, clear knowing, have dreams that mean something, have some sort of feeling when someone passes over, like a mother or father, someone very close to you, a loved one, and a sense that they're around. Okay. So I find quite common at parties when I share this side of myself, people come to me and share their story, the intimate little moment they had where it's like this thing happened to me. And yeah. I now kind of believe, and I don't know what to do with that. So it's at odds with this thing I got handed called religion. And I think faith is strong. Like I don't try and prove anything to anyone. I'm like, well, you honor that. Yeah, I think your mum might've been around. I think that experience where you think your grandmother was there, she probably was, right? And I find with my clients, if I say to you that didn't happen, would you be able to believe it? Otherwise they go, no, I actually believe she was there. And I'm like, that's belief. I can't give that to somebody. They experience it, and that's what intuition is. It's your own experience.
And I think the similarity, like when we're talking about believing in something, belief or faith or whatever you want, right? Like a lot of people grew up in a religious model, religious paradigm. Like I lived in a Catholic house, Catholic friends, Catholic teachers, Catholic schools. You know, so it's not likely that by the time you're 12, you're going to be a Buddhist or a Muslim or whatever when you grow up, or an atheist for that matter, right? So you grow up because you've been programmed. But even, like, I guess the commonality is in any religion, you're taught to believe in things that you can't prove, right? It's because if you could prove it, well, now you'd have knowledge, which makes the need for belief or faith redundant, right?
Yeah.
I don't need to believe that this cup, I'm holding up a cup, everybody. I don't need to believe that it exists because I'm holding it and I can see it, right? But if I'm a Christian, for example, I need to believe that Jesus was real, that he died on the cross, that da 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 da. Or if I'm, you know, a Buddhist, that Buddha was a dude and he was here and he shared all this wisdom whatever the religious or the philosophical or theological paradigm is. And I guess when you grow up, like you believing what you believe and you living and expressing yourself the way that you do is kind of, I'm not saying right, wrong, better, worse. I'm like, it's similar really, because it's a belief system, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, we all need to believe in something. I think true spirituality, I mean, even if we get a move away from religion, you know, spirituality and that kind of life takes you home to yourself. So my book Brave isn't about spirituality. It's about coming home to yourself.
What does that mean?
Making decisions from your intuition that where you honor yourself. So it might be quitting the job that you're sick of doing. You know, it's kind of like the life you've lived, Craig. You know, I followed my Dharma. You know, I'm now a keynote speaker. I'm writing a second book. I never thought I'd do this, but I followed my intuition and the callings and the nudgings the whole way along. Mm. And that sounds easy, but I've had to let go of friends. I've had to let go of identities. I've had to let go of my financial security. I've had to let go of a lot and sacrifice a lot along the way to step into a dream. And I think you need faith in yourself to dream big. So this has got nothing to do with religion or even speaking to the dead. That's an ability I just have that I serve with. The larger conversation is, are you living a truth? And what is your truth? And that's got nothing to do with religion or speaking to the dead. You know, when you wake up in the morning and you open your eyes, it's a new day. It's like how every action and decision you make and every thought you hold, how are you honoring yourself?
Mm. Yeah. And do you feel like what you do, Sheila, is this, I don't know if this is the right term, but do you feel like it's a calling?
Oh, absolutely. I would, if this wasn't a calling, I would be having my cushy CFO role and comfortably earning money. You know, the thing with a lot of clients I work with, I help them follow the calling and they always get a bit shocked when it's a bit difficult. And, you know, Craig, you've got this podcast, you've studied things. There's no way following your calling is easy. But I tell you, your life becomes so meaningful. You're so, when you're connected to your purpose, I wear a smile because I'm living a life that's in alignment with who I am. Is it easy all the time? No. However, I don't sit wanting for anything more. You know, when I used to have my corporate job, I used to think, what's the next job? What's the next right thing? What do I need to study to become more important or more responsible? And now I just sort of wait for the next door to open. I just kind of think, what would I love to do next?
Yeah.
And it's more from a place of heart.
I love the idea of what I think we all have in common, and you said it, and you're 100% right, is that I think most of us understand the concept of intuition and like a sense of knowing that we sometimes can't explain. And I've had some experiences in my life too, where just like where you know, well, you don't know, but you 100% think you absolutely know something, that there's no way I can know this. Like, this doesn't make sense that I know this. And yet that's proved to be the case. You know, it's a kind of an intuitive, instinctive, I don't know what it is. Is it supernatural? Is it a part of my brain? Is it something external that I'm channeling? You know, whatever it is. But yeah, this kind of knowing that we have beyond what we've actually been taught. Like, you know, when you know something that there's no way that you can know that or that you should know that, but you kind of do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love your language. It's a knowing, you said it's a knowing beyond what I've been taught. And that's exactly what intuition is. It goes beyond the rational, logical mind and it goes beyond what you've been taught. And so, you know, this clear knowing is if you're an entrepreneur or a really true visionary leader, you will be managing mostly from your intuition. And then possibly justifying it rationally with the Excel spreadsheets and, you know, a team, a board around you that will put in place structures and processes. But true intuition is being able to see the vision, you know, and then it locks. It's that gut feeling around your solar plexus is that I can't unknow this. I can't unfeel this feeling. My feeling is to go right. I can't not go right. And then when you disobey your feelings, you get signs. Life starts to give you cracks. You start to have problems. And then in the weeks and months and years to come, you go, I knew I shouldn't have done that. My intuition told me. See, everyone's used the word intuition in their vocabulary in their life. Everyone has that ability. Everyone said, my intuition told me to do this or not do that. And so how can we listen to it more, I guess, is what I teach.
So if our intuition is a form of knowledge or awareness or knowing or wisdom, and it doesn't come from education or training or programming, where does it come from?
It comes from our higher self. And is it important where it comes from? If you can trust it, if you keep on following your intuition and it's taking you to a good place, are you going to stop following it?
Come on. You know, I need to logicize this. You know, I need to get my mind around it. Stop telling me. Doesn't matter.
Intuition transcends logic. That's the point. You know, you look back at your amazing career, Craig. You've made some decisions that defy logic. And I bet you've gone, damn it, I'm so happy I did that thing.
I think I defy logic. I'm completely fucking illogical half the time.
Do you use your intuition? Do you use, how I should, you do use it. How do you?
Look, I'm a bit of a dichotomy because I study the brain and the mind and I'm fascinated with human behavior, but I also believe I'm highly intuitive, instinctive. I'm with you. You're better at this than me. You're definitely more comfortable. This is your thing. It's probably my ego that gets in the way and my insecurity, of which there is plenty of both, right? But I feel like if I open the spiritual door too much, people get weirded out.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to weird them out because I'm still into the brain and the mind and human behavior and, you know, psychology and physiology and, you know, being silly and having fun. But I think there's so much more to us than just what we think we know.
100%.
And it's that stuff that lives and the thing is, one of the challenges, this is my perspective, tell me what you think, and then I'll shut up because it's your show, not mine today. I feel like we try and rationalize non-mind stuff with the mind.
Absolutely. That's the humanness in us that does that. Absolutely.
And our mind gets in the way of what can be and might be.
Absolutely. And that's why really great leaders and entrepreneurs that move fast trust their intuition. They don't spend weeks and months writing strategy papers. And I do this in the corporate world, justifying what their gut feel told them to do. And the great billionaires around the world will be working from a highly intuitive space. So, you know, it's I feel like, yeah, we've got to justify it again because there's so much constructs and fear and could it be, you know, there's a ceiling to our dreams. Our rational mind doesn't allow us to really dream big, but our intuition will. And there's two ways to work, and I teach this with my clients. I get them to channel and sit in a space where they, you know, they close their eyes, we do a meditation, and they literally channel through, speak from the heart, speak from the gut, use whatever language resonates with you, but they'll channel through like where they need to go in life. Where the rational mind becomes very useful, and this is my finance background, is the structures and the processes and systems that are needed to manifest it. You've got to run a business, you've got to have accounting records, you've got to make sales calls, you've got to do marketing. Okay, some intuition definitely comes into play there. It's a process you need, but the big feelings in life, that's intuition. You know, the calls you've got to make, maybe the sales calls you might have 10 to do, but your intuition might be going, that's the one I think that's going to work. That person's going to buy from me. So you've got to find a way to weave intuition into the logical mind through the day, that they belong together.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's the challenge is, you know, and in science, if you can't see it, touch it, feel it, measure it, hold it, weigh it, poke it, it's not real.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but again, and I don't want to shoot myself in the foot because I love science and it's important. But again, science is a man-made construct. It's like without humans, science doesn't exist. There's just stuff, right?
Yeah.
So again, science is a thing that we created to help us understand shit. I think that's what it says in the dictionary, right?
Yeah. I think I've been quite lucky. I've always been a natural believer. And I think the more you believe, the more you manifest and it shows up.
And but don't you need to be discerning though about what you believe? Like you need wisdom, right? You can't just believe anything and everything.
But I don't believe an external construct. I believe what my intuition tells me and that comes from you. Right. So that's the belief. The belief is believing in yourself, you know, and as far as, you know, in 10 to 20, 12, 14 years ago, I was doing yoga and I was wearing shorts. More than that, 14, 15 years ago, I was doing yoga. There was no meditation. There were no apps. Meditation was weird. Yoga, we're all wearing running shorts. I remember when I did yoga, there weren't yoga tights. This is a very fast movement. We think it's been around for a long time. So I'm actually happy to be the brave, courageous person to talk about spirit guides and to really talk about psychic and intuitive abilities that everyone has. Because believe me, in 10 to 15 years time, we'll have boards of directors sit around meditating and writing and channeling from a space of intuition, because these are the kids now that are meditating, they're doing yoga, they're coming back to breath. And in 20, 30 years' time, they're going to be running big companies and they're going to trust intuition. They're going to believe and they're not going to question it. It's just our generation that's caught between these two conscious, unconscious worlds. But the kids now coming through, I see my niece and nephew, their whole mindset is so conscious. They're not grappling with anything. So I'm happy to be in my generation, I mean, my mid-40s, to talk about spirit guides to corporate directors, because I think, yeah, it's going to be very common knowledge in the years to come that everyone's going to connect with their own guides and their own inner knowing. And it's not going to be something we're scared of.
I think being an intuitive psychic reader must be anti-aging, Tiff. What do you think?
My thoughts exactly.
I'm like, when you said I'm 46, because like the way 44, you talk,
don't thinking, add 2 years to me.
Like, what mid-40s, what are you?
44. How old are you, Craig?
I'm 115.
Yeah, look, I'm over 114.
Yeah, I know, but I've just used a really good moisturizer. I'm 57.
Yeah, amazing.
I'm 57. Thank you. So, I mean, it's funny. Maybe in 10 years we'll see in a board meeting the strategy people, the finance people, the intuitives all working together to create a direction for the company.
100%. You know, I know I work with CEOs that come to me for psychic readings around, you know, the direction of their company and the direction of themselves. I work with men and executives. So just because it's not spoken about openly doesn't mean that people don't believe and use these skills. Like I said, meditation 15 years ago, that was really, it was laughed at. It was considered, does this work? This is weird. And now most companies have some sort of mindfulness program. And saying you got to leave to go and do a meditation or you meditated this morning, that's really normal. It's the new normal. So I wonder what in 10 years' time will be the new normal. And I think...
go on.
Yeah, like I take my hat off to meditation teachers 15 years ago that were pushing the boundaries. And they're like, now it's a given. So I'd like to think I'm part of that wave that's pushing the boundaries on consciousness and connection to self and our own intuition as... You know, your intuition is a power and it's a superpower when you listen to it and honor it. That's when it becomes your superpower.
It's interesting you say that about meditation and mindfulness. The other day I interviewed with Melissa, we interviewed a girl who's on tomorrow. We're recording this Wednesday. Oh, no, she's on Friday. So I'm not sure when this is going up, but we'll have already been up by then. But her name is Kavya. And she's researching internet addiction, and the treatment in inverted commas is mindfulness. And so they're using mindfulness as an intervention to treat people or to help people navigate that. And yeah, and it's funny. And this is a girl doing a PhD in cognitive psychology, and their measure that they're using or the intervention tool that they're using is essentially a spiritual practice.
Absolutely.
So it's coming together.
It's coming together. You know, science is a little delayed. And, you know, out of Silicon Valley, you know, there's a lot of talk about, you know, the ayahuasca. I've done ayahuasca ceremonies and you know, it is reprogramming of your neural pathways. So you've got deep plant medicine that can create that. You've got mindfulness that really is... you know, you're taking your brain waves into different brainwave states. It's connecting different parts of the brain, getting different parts of the brain to start speaking to one another. Those parts of the brain, I suspect, lie dormant when you're addicted to something like the internet. And it's just creating a new neural pathway so you become less addicted. And there's a whole spectrum of ways we can do that. And so, yes, science is catching up. We can wait for science or we can get curious and empower ourselves to explore these different tools around us and use ourselves as a little petri dish, as I did with meditation for many years. I just thought, I'm going to give it a go and see if I can change my life. You know, I suffered from depression and anxiety in my early 20s and 30s, and I thought, I need to overcome this. That's what took me on my spiritual awakening. I thought, I've got to find a way to change my life. So I just started to experiment. It's much easier now. There's a lot more things available and in the open.
Mm. We had a guy on a couple of months ago, Sheila. His name is Professor Amit Goswami. You would love him. He is a professor of theoretical quantum physics.
Oh, wow.
And he, oh my God, you blow your head off. He's like, he lives at the intersection of mysticism, spirituality, and science.
I bet he does. What a great place to live.
He is so smart. And I started interviewing him, and I'm about 10 minutes into the interview, and I'm thinking to myself, really, I'm thinking to myself, I'm not saying it out loud, I'm too dumb to interview this man. I'm like, fucking hell, I don't. And you know when you're talking to somebody that's super smart and you're just hanging on?
Yeah.
Like, I think I know what he's talking about. And he was brilliant. And also another person we spoke to, pursuant to your conversation about psychedelics, ayahuasca, etc., was another guy from the uni that I study at, who's there's at Monash Uni in Clayton, Brain Park, where I'm based. There's a they're doing research now into psychedelics as a treatment,
mm-hmm.
As therapy for people with anxiety, depression, PTSD, and that's also, you know, with the spiritual movement. And I know that, like, when you say meditation is obviously in Eastern culture, it's been around forever, but in Australia, it's with the general population, relatively new practice, but also the use of psychedelics, which I've never used, so I'm completely not an authority, but that's becoming more and more spoken about and explored in terms of the therapeutic benefits of using psychedelics in a clinical way. So, like, there's a lot of new and exciting stuff happening. And I think also because, I don't know, maybe people are opening these new doors because they, you know, we live in the typical model and we go, well, I bought a car, I bought a house, I got a good job, I make okay money, I'm not in bad shape. But in the middle of all of that, I'm still not particularly happy.
Absolutely. We go from I'm not happy to there must be a greater meaning.
Yes.
You know? And then we start becoming seekers. And when you become a seeker, you seek answers. And then that's the best place to be, because that's when you get curious and you stop being limited by your constructs and your paradigm. You're like, I'm just going to start reading books and challenging my belief sets, right? It depends on how old you are when this happens. I mean, it could be predicated on a bit of a crisis. That makes you, you know, the marriage you thought would last forever, it dissolves. And then your whole identity is wrapped up in that. And then that's a dissolving of your ego, who you are. And then it's a great place to be, even though it feels like, you know, hellish at times, but it's the place where you can rebuild yourself more authentically, right? You can be reborn in some, you know, into like a newer version of yourself.
So what's your definition of spirituality?
Oh, that's a great question. I've never actually thought about what would my definition be. I think to be spiritual is to listen to your heart. To have a spiritual life is to be, you know, consciously aware of your thoughts and your actions and the spoken word, and to have greater compassion for yourself and ultimately those around you. I think spirituality isn't really about speaking to the dead. You know, and it's not about it's not like a type of knowledge or a construct to live by. It's just a way of being where you honor yourself.
So can you differentiate, and I think I know the answer, but just for us, so spirituality and psychic ability, tell us what psychic ability is.
Well, I think you said it well. It's an ability. So a psychic ability, you know, we have a vibration and we are energy, okay? And we're on this third dimension. As you opened it up, I think you opened this talk by saying we're on this dimension. Your consciousness knows we're in a realm. And then with psychic ability, medium, you're able to reach higher dimensions, okay? And to do that, you need to lift your vibration, which is an energy field. And your quantum physicists would have spoken about energy fields around us. And you might have a natural ability to be a psychic, or it might happen later in life, but it tends to happen when you lift your vibration. And then as you lift your vibration and your consciousness and your thoughts, you're able to actually travel through consciousness into other dimensions and planes. And we're getting a little heavier here, but as we do that, you can connect to other souls, other energies, and other vibrations. A lot of books and music are channeled from high vibrations, and they come through dream state. When we're in the dream state, we might travel to other planes, right? And that's when we come back with information. So psychic abilities and ability just to speak and connect with other energies on different dimensions. Spirituality is a way of being.
Yeah.
You know, spirituality is a way of being in life, where I believe you honor yourself. And I think everyone has access to spirituality.
So your psychic ability, like anyone else's ability in different realms, I guess you go, well, I have a base, like I have this ability, I have this gift, whatever. So I guess it's trainable. So I guess it can be developed and evolved.
100%. Everyone has intuition. Everyone's used the word, my intuition's told me, I had an intuitive moment. Everyone said that in their life at some point, 100%, right? Or had the thought at least. And so at some point you've had that ability show up in your life. And so if you keep the practice of trusting your intuition, like going, inevitably that muscle will grow. Inevitably more intuition begets more intuition begets more intuition. That's when synchronicity happens in your life. That's when signs show up, because you start co-creating with the universe. Mm. Deepak Chopra talks about synchro destiny as a small cluster of synchronistic events pointing you in the direction of your destiny, synchro destiny. Mm. So when you follow your intuition, what happens is your vibration lifts. Like when you follow your intuition, good things happen in life, right? Mm. Lift your vibration. You go, oh, wow, saying yes to that thing was a great idea. Then you come back into that high vibrational state. You listen more to your intuition. And then before you know it, this thing you thought was really hard to do suddenly becomes easier because you're being guided. You're going into action and you're listening.
Okay, a couple of red herring questions that you may or may not, you know, just feel free to deflect. Why do you think, Sheila, that so many of us care so much about what other people think, and people that don't even really love us, but we're so concerned like that about getting people's approval or looking or appearing or seeming a certain way? Why are we so obsessed with that in our culture?
I think for two reasons. Firstly, our reptilian brain needs to survive by belonging. And I'll sell my soul to belong to my family for many years. I'll sell my soul to belong to my husband, because if he leaves me, I don't know how to pay the bills. You know, I'll sell myself to a company because I have a job and I've got a mortgage to pay that I've refinanced and I can't leave, right? So there's a belonging for a security imperative. And there's also a belonging from a sense of identity perspective. If I belong, I'm valid. Mm. You validate me. By me being part of this culture or society, I get a feeling of validation. Okay. So that's one way. I had the second way, I can't remember it now.
That's all right. No, that was a bloody good answer.
The second way, it just came back to me. It's our attachment style to our parents. If you don't attach in a healthy way to mother or father, a bit like you, Craig, I've just read every textbook under the sun. I'm an avid reader. I worked in publishing for 15 years and I left as a CFO of Simon & Schuster Publishing. And I used to read, read, read. I've read till the cows come home. The other is attachment style. So if you don't attach in a very healthy way to your mother or father, right, what happens later in life is you'll attach to anyone that will validate or love you. And again, you'll sell out. I've done this a lot in my life because I've had my own traumas and things in my life where I didn't have a healthy attachment. And so I'd attach to men and get their approval and seek love because I couldn't find it within myself. And for that reason, I would do what they wanted me to do and not what I wanted to on a very basic level, right? And that for those two reasons, that's why we sell out on ourselves. But if you learn to attach in a relationship in a healthy way, you won't sell out on yourself. If you learn to be okay with not belonging and finding another soul tribe to belong to, I talk about this in my book, Brave. I've got a chapter called Soul Tribes. You know, the courage to belong to a different tribe. Sometimes you've got to leave one tribe and sit in the void until the new tribe shows up. And you've got to sometimes find that new tribe that you belong to. But that leaves a void that can be very uncomfortable. And that's why we'll stay in old friendships or stay with the family, because we're not willing to travel and find a new group of people that will see us. Because we can't see ourselves.
Why do you think we're so scared of being alone? And I know the lizard brain, and we've got to belong and tribe and safety and the, you know, like the genetic timeline of, but other than, we just seem to be terrified of just being with ourselves and present and just going deep. Like, what's coming up for me? We seem to, one, need to be around other people in like an unhealthy way sometimes, and two, need to distract ourselves from what's coming up.
I think the distraction is relating to not being able to be with the pain relating to incidences that have happened in our childhood that are unresolved.
Right.
Whole lot of unresolved issues from childhood through to teenage years, through to our first loves and heartbreaks. We collect all of this pain along the way, and we don't ever process it properly, so that we add pain on pain on pain. And then when we finally get divorced or get made redundant or lose all our money, the pain in that is actually all the unprocessed pain. And it's very painful. We truly as humans aren't equipped to deal with it. And that's why there's such a role for so many more people to step up into a path of service now. Because I work with this in my business. You know, I do inner child work. I do regression work. You know, I help people access their intuition. Because you can't actually process the pain on your own. You generally need a therapist, a counselor, a mentor, a coach.
Mm.
There's so many more people that offer so many modalities. Mm. You need to be assisted to that through that process, because there's so much in the unconscious mind, right? So that's why we don't process pain. It's too painful. And secondly, we don't know how to. And the first question you had about, you know, loneliness. Loneliness is a very painful experience. And fundamentally as humans, it's not even that we want to receive love. It's we want to give it. We all have this innate feeling to love somebody.
Mm.
You know, I think that's why falling in love is so awesome. It's not even just that someone loves me. It's like, I get to love somebody.
Mm.
I get to wake up and think about someone. I get to wake up and think, what can I give them? Like, how can I serve them? Problem is, when you do that too much, you might self-abandon. That's when we get into trouble in a lot of relationships. We self-abandon ourselves. But it's the giving of love. We don't actually think about how rewarding that is.
Yeah. How many times have you been in love?
Oh, I'm an old soul, right? So,
in this lifetime.
No. And because I'm an old soul, and this is for all the old souls out there, you get a chance to meet many more soulmates when you're an old soul. And so I've been in love definitely twice, and I've just broken up with someone who I was deeply in love with. I can be vulnerable and say that, and I think you stand to love more deeply the older you get, because I think if you really allow yourself to get vulnerable, you get to have the deliciousness of being in love. And I think if you have access to more resilience and strength, you also have access to like not being with it as well, which is very painful.
Wow.
Am I getting too deep for you now, Craig?
No, I love it. I love how real and raw and vulnerable you are. And thank you for being so honest. Okay, a couple of questions, and I'm going to let you go and put your caftan back on and wave your fucking dream catchers or whatever you do.
Yeah, and sage my apartment after this interview.
I'm just kidding. What are you doing?
Sage my apartment, you know.
Oh, yeah, of course. That's right. Just astral travel to another dimension.
We have in this interview, we've astral traveled big time, Craig.
That's exactly. Well, I'm not even here. You just think I'm here. I'm only in your head. Right. That's what I wanted to ask you about. Okay. So I'm interested in your take on identity. So a lot of us get our sense of self from stuff, what we have, what we own, what we earn, what people think of us. You know, what I do is who I am. My job is who I am. My title, my role, my responsibilities, they are who I am. Or my awesome reputation, or my brand, or my authority, or And obviously, you know, you might think, well, who I am is I'm a professional athlete. That's amazing. Wow, everyone loves me. I'm professional. Then all of a sudden, you fuck your knee, you get delisted. Now you're not a professional athlete. You're a dude without a job or a girl without a job. And then so there's this immense sense of loss and grief for many people because they don't know who they are beyond what they do or what they have, right? Tell me about your ideas around identity.
Okay, so there's two ways I'll answer it. The one thing is our ego is always going to attach onto an identity. So consciously know that that is what is happening. And consciously choose that it's an identity and you're in alignment with it and it's in alignment with your highest values. Hey, I'm a professional athlete. I want to inspire a lot of young women and men to reach for their dreams, go for their goals, right? The Olympics is around the corner. We're about to all see a group of people highly attached to their identity about being an elite sportsman, right? But we get really inspired by that. So if you're going to have an identity, be conscious about what it is and think about it beyond that from a place of service, perhaps. Hey, I'm a very important CEO, CFO. Okay, I'm going to really mentor the people underneath me that want to get to this position in their life. So consciously do it. Also, be very aware that like an identity, if it's external to you, it can go. It can disappear overnight. You can lose your job. You know, you can lose the marriage. You can lose your physical ability to move. You know, like these Olympians, get injured and then everything has been put into that basket of winning a gold medal and representing their country. And then overnight that may not happen, right? So then there is a process of reconstructing a different identity, right? And that's always, the ego is always there at play, but that's, you know, that's when you have your crisis and your dark night. And it's like, well, what identity am I choosing to go into? And again, you need support when you're moving from identity to from one identity to another. I guess the highest way of being is to go beyond the identity. Who do I love in my life? Who do I serve? What can I be grateful for? That's not identity, right? Perhaps it is. Who you love might be related to your identity. But being from a place of gratitude and knowing how can I serve and how can I lift the consciousness of the planet, maybe that's a nice way to be.
Mm. So can I ask you a curly last philosophical question?
I'm pretty curly so far, but
are you ready?
Go for it.
You better be bloody ready because this is going to, you're not going to know what to say. You ready?
Let me get my crystals.
All right, get your crystals, get your bloody dream catcher, get your caftan, get your sandals. You ready?
Let me get my shamanic drum and start drumming. Go for it.
Get all that going. Okay, so you have a body, but you're not a body, correct?
Correct.
You have a soul, but you are not a soul?
No, I don't think, I think we're spirit, but we're not a soul, yeah.
Okay, so you have a job, but you're not a job. You own money, but you're not money.
Mm.
You have skills, but you are not a skill. But you have skills and you have emotions, but you yourself are not an emotion. You have creativity, but you are not a creation. Well, you are of sorts. So who are you amidst all these things you're not?
Well, I'm a spirit having experiences.
How do you know?
Well, I don't know if we do know. I'm just explaining how I experience life. You know, when I'm in, and this is a nice way when you're in a crisis, you know, I'm a soul here on earth having the experience of a divorce. I'm a soul here on the earth having the experience of having just received a call that I've lost my job. Having the experience of it takes you out of the victimhood and takes you out of the crisis and the emotion. Mm. I'm having the experience of deep depression now. Mm. And so just detaching from that, you know, and then not getting too attached to the elation. I'm having the experience of falling in love right now. Isn't this great? And at some point we're going to start fighting and some point we're going to get into conflict, right? So just stepping a little out of the movie, like the Truman Show. Remember all those years ago?
Yeah, I love that show.
Yeah, it was. He just step out of the movie that is your life and watch it and go, wow, that's an experience. Yeah. Perhaps I cannot fall into the tragedy of it and I cannot fall into the infatuation of it either. And I can just grow and constantly look at how am I growing? How am I becoming stronger?
Yeah. Perfect. Perfect. Well, you know, you're a weirdo, right? But
totally. That's my identity.
Yeah, lovable weirdo though. That's okay. We reckon you're all right. We might get you back. Hey, That was fantastic. Tell everyone how they can connect with you, get your book, follow you, social media, all that.
Yeah, I'd love to connect with anyone that's found anything a bit weird or wacky. Website, sheilav.co. My book is available in Big W and Target and all good bookstores around Australia and New Zealand. It's available in America in September. It's available in the UK. Brave, Courageously Live Your Truth. I offer readings. I offer mentorship. I've got a retreat coming up in December. Connect with me. And, you know, if you've connect with me about your opinions. I love feedback. So on Instagram, it's Sheila V. I love receiving messages on Facebook. And I'm running an intuition program, Awakening Intuition. It's a 10-week program. It's a foundation. So if you know nothing and you want to know and you've been called to, like, start thinking about chakras and spirit guides and protection, you've always wanted to know, I've got a 10-week foundation program that just will guide you through that process.
Perfect.
Love to hear from you.
I knew that was coming because I'm intuitive. All right. See what I did there, Tiff?
Sure did.
Sheila, thank you. Stay there. Thank you so much for being on the U Project. Tiff, thank you. Good get.
Thank you, sir.
You told me she was going to be a weirdo. You weren't wrong.
What I love. Can I tell you the part I love?
I'm just being silly, everyone. I'm not being respectful. I actually think she's great. Go, Tiff.
I loved watching you seeking the scientific clarification of intuition after the many conversations we've had where you have described things coming through you.
Yeah. Exactly.
Information coming through you. And I was like, look at you wanting the science. And there were parts of the conversation where I went, that has been, these things have happened in my life that make me believe what you're saying. But then there's parts of the conversation that your conscious mind goes, that's weird. I'm scared of someone trying to make something up, you know, trying to
Something. I don't ask most of those questions for me. I ask those for the listeners because you know, I believe for a long time that, see, I think, Sheila, we're going to keep going for another minute, apparently.
It sounds so like we are.
So I'm apparently we're not finished, but that's okay. welcome back. I've always thought and believed that there's something going on. Now, I don't know what the something is and I can't explain it, but because of my job where I speak and listen and pay attention for a living, I'm also very aware that people filter and process things with their mind. And people have stories, oh, psychics are idiots, or they're brilliant, or religion's bullshit, or religion's amazing, or the spiritual world, that's just for people who are weak and want a fucking safety net. Or I understand the complexity of having these conversations and that there will be people that are open, people that are closed, and that's okay. We're not endorsing or rejecting anything. We're having a conversation. But you're exactly right, Tiff. I mean, there have been many times where I have written stuff and I've written words, paragraphs, ideas, even whiteboard messages. You know, like how I actually pulled this up on my phone a minute ago and I wrote this yesterday, which is almost colliding, if not, it is colliding with what we're talking about. And I wrote this yesterday. My life is, this is what people tell me a lot. My life is good, but something's missing and I don't know what the something is, right? That's literally what we're talking about. But you're right. I've written things where I feel like it didn't come from my brain. It came from somewhere else. And it's like, I am a conduit for those messages. Now, I know how fucking ridiculous that sounds, right? Because I'm a researcher and a scientist.
So move out of the place of resistance, Craig. You know, like you're an inspiration to so many white Caucasian men in your age group, right? So you could be a way shower. There is something from beyond you. Like go beyond the superstition and the trinkets and the name psychic, right? So even I got really confronted and I didn't tell anyone I was a psychic medium. For years when I was in the finance world, I knew I'd be laughed at. And I was thinking, how do I get to the board? You know, I'm highly intelligent, did an MBA, I graduated with distinction. I was like, I have an ambition and an intelligence to lead in a financial capacity. If I talk about going on psychic TV, am I going to get fired? Am I going to get laughed at and ridiculed? And then, you know, like you just spoke to, Craig, I love a good Excel spreadsheet. You know, I love a good reconciliation. You know, I love that rational, logical aspect to our thinking. I think that what's what makes humans progress so quickly. It's like, why can't they coexist?
Yeah.
Why are we choosing? Like I said, weave the rational and the intuition together. It'd be far more effective in life because you downloaded a whole lot of things that came right through you as a channel. Then you had to use your rational mind and actually make it happen. You had to make this podcast happen. You had to make the phone calls, right? They can coexist.
There have been many, many times in my life where I've gone into a situation and before I get to the situation, I have this overwhelming sense of something that I need to be aware of, and I get there and then I know why I was given that feeling, right?
Yep.
I told this once before. I'll just give the brief version, but I had to work with a group only a couple of years ago, and it was quite a difficult collection of people to work with. And I was just walking down a corridor to this room, and just me in the corridor, the door was shut, couldn't see anyone. I'd done this every week for a few years with a similar group. I walked, and before I got there, I have this like this fear come through me and this awareness and basically this sense of be careful. And like, it wasn't like I was pre-warned, there was nothing. And then I got in to do that session with that group, and it was really, there was a lot of complicated dark shit going on. And I was pre-warned about that.
Yeah,
and I know that sounds ridiculous.
No, it doesn't sound ridiculous.
You know, and I know. So anyway, who the fuck knows? I'm just off to buy a crystal ball and a caftan. And let's say goodbye finally, but you stay on the thing. Sheila, thank you. Tiff, thank you. Everyone else, love your gutses. Love your collective gutses. See you next time.